Well, first up on today's show, Bill Resnick is here to talk with Pete Dolak, who has written a book about learning from past revolutions. Here's Bill.
Thank you, Clayton. Pete Dolak, welcome to KBOO.
Oh, thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Pete Dolak wrote the recent book, It's Not Over, Learning from the Socialist Experiment. It's not over examined how left can operate to win struggles, to fight for and establish an authentically democratic system when the previous capitalist system falls into deep trouble. That's when the productive, when capital's productive system ceases to deliver the goods, when food prices are spiking, when the government is unable to act, paralyzed, delegitimated, which was has happened from time to time in many places, which Pete writes about and then talks about how the left operated and what they might have done. Pete Dolak, I'm not a crisis monger and never believed during even the last 50 years or so that the periodic capitalist recessions and depressions, that the U.S. empire was seriously threatened. They've always been able to reconstruct themselves in crisis, to jumpstart growth and keep the whole system going. Today, though, it seems to me the things have changed. I believe, in fact, that the current system is really threatened. They're not able to respond. I know you agree. So let's talk first about the reasons for that conclusion, the basis for concluding that the country is really deeply threatened and not able to move. And then we can talk about what a left might do in a crisis that's not, in fact, unexpected, but that we can anticipate. What can we do now to prepare for when the crisis deepens and the struggle becomes much more serious?
Okay, let's start with the first portion of that. I think what we're looking at right now, Bill, is that this is not just your typical boom-bust cycle that obviously capitalism cycles through every 7, 8, 9 years. You get a little boom, you get a little bust, and you just keep going. I think this is quantifiably different, more on the scale of what we saw in the Great Depression when capitalism reaches a crisis point and doesn't have a way out of it. I think the difference between now and the 1930s is that I don't believe that there's an escape route. They still had an escape route in the 1930s because the capitalist world system still had places to grow. There was still potential for growth within the capitalist North, the U.S. included. And I think the Keynesian period that we experienced for a couple of decades after World War II demonstrated that. Now, I know there's a lot of nice folks out there who say, geez, this neoliberalism is really awful. We really ought to go back to Keynesianism. But the problem with that is Keynesianism in the mid-20th century was a product of a very specific time with very specific circumstances, and those circumstances and times no longer exist. And now, at that time, the capitalist system still had places to expand, and, of course, countries like the U.S. and the rest of the capitalist global North still had a manufacturing base. So the capitalists, of course, also had in mind the 1930s, where very recently in the past at that point, remember that their system was starting to teeter on the brink there. And therefore, they were more willing to make concessions, and they could tolerate rising wages and rising standard of living for the workers because they could export so much stuff and expand so much, they could still increase their profits. Now you get into the 60s and the 70s, that wasn't the case anymore. Western Europe is now on its feet. Japan is now on its feet. You have very stiff global capitalist competition. You can't keep your profits growing. So what do? You have to start cutting your costs.
Yeah, and you can't discipline all of the competitors now. Capital is not stuck in a state or anywhere. And, in fact, they have so much power that it's very difficult to force them into any kind of grand escape method by declaring bankruptcy and then starting over, maybe killing a lot of people in a war, but jump-starting growth and to continue. I think, though, Pete, there's another factor that influences me so greatly is that there's no room for jump-starting growth. That is, they can sort of jump-start it. It can it can collapse as it did for a while. I mean, slow down a lot as it did in what became a worldwide recession in 2008. But they then they can sort of reflate it in one way or another, often through wars. They managed to reflate the Keynesian system did not get us out of World War II. What it was the war that, in fact, led to the spending that Keynes called for and for other means and purposes. In any event, growth can't be growth is not a way out any longer. Growth just means more pollution, which means exacerbating global warming. They really have to reconstruct their system, completely reconstruct their whole productive system, and they can't even agree to building towards very small steps to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, much less reconstruct the whole system. Anyway, that's my sense, that they're now in deep trouble and they're just going to keep going until climate crisis leads to a collapse in production.
Indeed, they are looking at a crisis. You're quite right. It was the spending of World War II and all the destruction therein. And, of course, there was the room for your expansion after World War II because they had leveled so much stuff. Obviously, this is not the way we want to get out of any crisis, especially with all the nuclear weapons around. So that's the thing. There's no place to expand, they cannot grow, as you put it. Boil it down right down to the essence there how you just put it. They can't grow anymore. And the whole problem with the capitalist system is that it has to grow to be able to function. Now we also have the environmental crisis now coming to a head, because now even if we wanted to grow, which, you know, we don't, we can't, because it indeed means more pollution, more depletion of resources, etc. You can't have infinite growth on a finite planet. I mean, that's basic mathematics. And so what do we do? For the capitalist answer is, okay, we'll just keep pressing people down, and we're pressing people down, and we'll keep moving our production to ever cheaper places with ever lower wages and ever lower environmental standards, I guess until finally there's no more countries to move to, I suppose, because within the capitalist system, that's what the answer is for if you're a capitalist. Obviously, for the overwhelming majority of humanity, i.e. we working people, this is a very bad thing. But this is the only answer that capitalism has for us. So if we're going to get to a better, more rational world, then we have to have a completely different economic system. We can't solve the crisis that's only beginning. You know, as difficult as things have been these last several years, and as much as the problems of global warming are starting to creep in, this is only the very beginning of the problems. This is only the very beginning of the decay that we're going to see. Things are going to get much worse, not all at once. I don't think there's going to be any catastrophic collapse or sudden collapse. I think it's going to be periods of stagnation, periods of down, like we experienced in 2008. And, you know, very occasionally they might find a way to blip up a little bit of a bubble here and there, but it'll be a temporary blip and it won't really have any benefit for any working people. And so we're really faced, you know, it's like Rosa Luxemburg said at the beginning of the 20th century, socialism or barbarism. And that really now, that really is in this century, as the 21st century unfolds, that really is the challenge that humanity faces.
Mm-hmm. You know, it could, though, come much sooner than we anticipate. I agree with you that it could play out over 50 or 100 years from now. But it could play out in 20 years from now, too, depending on the physics of climate change and how its impact is and what some unpredictable, where climate science can't predict the precise conditions that are going to occur, because there's always countervailing factors that might change things. But capitalism on a trajectory towards, it seems to me, sort of suicide, unassisted, that is, by them. They just can't imagine reconstructing their system. The scale of it would be so great. The many industries would be gone. Many other industries slowed down. The whole financial system would have to end and be radically changed. Life patterns would end. The I mean, the kinds of life patterns that they push and promote could not, on a large scale, cannot continue. It seems to me, and that's really a finding of the climate scientists. This is not crazy Marxists or revolutionaries. It seems to me that that's a trajectory, trajectory that we're on. Pete, let's now. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Pete Dolek, who did a book. It's Not Over, Learning from the Socialist Experiment. Let's learn from other experiments, and let's talk about that. What can a left right now do? And it seems to me we have to begin then with what's likely to happen when the system begins breaking down, as it is in some third world country, in some countries of the world, especially where drought is just driving people to death or migration, or the island nations, or the deltas, actually, or Miami Beach and Long Island, who will be flooded in the next 10, 20, 30 years. Don't buy beachfront property. Pete, what happens when the crisis comes, though, it seems to me we have to recognize there's going to be a right-wing force that is also when the people decide that when people wake up to the fact that they're in deep trouble from global warming and other reasons and they demand action, then there's also going to be a right wing forming asking for people's support seeking support, and it's going to be a democratic left is going to be in contention with a very authoritarian, xenophobic, militarist, corporate right wing that wants to impose their vision of how we get out of this crisis, which will be surely authoritarian. How do we operate now so that when that crisis comes, we're strong enough to prevail?
Well, I think we have to organize now, and we have to educate people as best we can and as rapidly as we can, because that right-wing backlash you just spoke of, that's we already see bits and pieces of that right now with the Trump campaign. And you know, that's going to be there. And, of course, they're going to have the force of the state behind us. So, you know, there's going to be It's not going to be a pretty picture.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a pretty picture. So I think what we on the left have to be, if we're going to create a better world, if we're going to bring a better world into being, we really have to be the overwhelming majority, because we're going to have to counter a very nasty, very potentially lethal right-wing backlash from people who, you know, there's no capitalist government that ever gave up the ghost peacefully. I mean, there's been the occasional peaceful change because the Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia, but that was because the communists decided, all right, our time is up. Here you go. We're handing you over power. No capitalist government ever does that. No capitalist ever does that. So we really have to be prepared that as much as we'd like everything to be completely peaceful and nice and, you know, let's win an election and hand over power to us peacefully, it's probably not going to happen that way. So the bigger majority we are, the stronger we are, the better equipped we're going to be and the better educated we are, the better equipped we're going to be able to counter as quickly as possible that inevitable right-wing backlash that we are going to have to face.
Although it's not going to be a backlash, it's going to be a they're not a backlash against us. It's going to be the system's going to be in deep trouble, and they're going to organize to take it to impose their ideas. I wish it were a backlash. Pete, what do you see, though, as those ways of building then? I think you're right. We have to build a great majority. And since people are urbanizing all over the world, and especially in the, quote, developed world, but also the developing world, we're so urbanized, it seems to me that we're talking about organizing cities and these huge, not just the cities, but the huge regions and the agglomeration of people. The East Coast of the United States is going to be one big mass of human beings, although that's the wrong image. It seems to me that cities can be beautiful and wonderful places and not massified, but in fact with lots of individual freedoms to have very rich lives that you might not be able to enjoy in the countryside. But what do we do to organize, to build those mass movements?
Okay, I think we, learning from the past, you know, we it's got to be democratic. You know, it's got to be multicultural. It's got to be a coalition of type. You know, the old-fashioned idea of there will be one party and we all belong to one party and the one party will march us to victory. That's just not how political culture works in a country like the United States or any Western democracy. There's so many different problems out there. There's so many special oppressions of people of color, of women, of LGBT communities, and all these various things. You know, the climate justice, everything. All these things have to all be linked up together, and we all have to learn how to work with one another, understand each other's. And the old idea of, okay, well, you wait your turn, we'll have the revolution, and you know, we'll solve sex discrimination once the revolution is over. We have to get out of that mentality. It's like we all go to freedom together. That's what we have to do. And you know, and it has to be democratic. That sounds like a simple thing. We also have to be strong enough that, you know, when this, you know, counterforce comes at us, I guess maybe backlash is a little too soft a word, I have to agree with you there, when this inevitable counterforce, you have to be strong enough, because you know, those socialist experiments of the 20th century, they had tremendous pressures coming on. I mean, look at a little country like Nicaragua. The United States has 100 times its population, and you had, you know, they just endlessly funded the Contras and caused all kinds of terrorist activity, all kinds of damage to them, and it just creates distortions. Even after the Russian Revolution, it took such a tragic, unfortunate turn. But, you know, you had 14 countries immediately invaded and did everything they can to crush it. There's going to be, you know, there's going to be distortions in that. So a big part of the question is, you know, can we be a big enough force? Can enough countries go socialist as a bloc that they can better withstand the inevitable counterassault from the capitalist world and be able to meaningfully create something better? And these are things, you know, we're all going to have to work out. And I think we have to start thinking really seriously about, because the crisis is coming, whether it's 20 years from now or 40 years from now. It's definitely coming in the lifetime of a lot of people who are alive right now.
In your writing, I believe you talked about the necessity of building alternatives and, in fact, building models of what a decent society could be in the belly of the beast. It seems to me that's possible. We have to explore those. Well, we're doing more than exploring them, actually. There is a left forming in many cities, particularly, that is seeking to democratize, let's say, its energy system, which I think is vitally important, and provides a model of democratic management, local management, and also, but confederated. So, I mean, an electric system has to be regional and national as well, especially now when we're using intermittent sources, so the storage facilities have to be regional. It seems to me we're on the verge of thinking about, even within this system now, of changing all sorts of systems, let's say the transit system. We can't go on just driving gasoline-powered machines that spew pollution, and electric machines, in event. We need a different transportation system, which requires much less energy and electric energy. And that's going to have to be a public transit system. We're really on the verge of where we're seeing those systems that have to be developed. And in some cities, it's sort of happening. Even here in Portland, although our efforts are extremely oversold, and various cities have various different kinds of problems. New York City, in any event, we can't talk about that in detail, but it does seem to me there are possibilities now for all kinds of alternative models in agriculture, for example, alternative models of how we eat and live and how we transport ourselves. All of those are, in fact, being practiced in one way or another all around the world, with Portland actually doing some of the heavy lifting and planning. Pete, I'm sure you agree. We only have another minute or two. Why don't you say what you want to say.
I'd certainly agree with that. Well, I think the old model of, you know, let's put everything in state hands obviously didn't work. It was overly centralized, and nobody can possibly have enough information to maintain all that themselves. So certain key industries should be in public hands, in state hands, if you will. Energy, certainly, and I think banking also, finance in general. Banking should just be reduced to a public utility. But with these things under democratic community control, and a lot of other rest of the economy, you know, can be done in cooperatives, obviously much smaller enterprises than the behemoths we have today. But a key thing for this is that the cooperatives have to cooperate with each other. If the cooperatives compete with each other, then you're just going to start reproducing a lot of the same problems. So you'd need a system of price negotiation. Everybody's finances would have to be open so everybody knows what's doing. Nobody can profit monger off somebody else. The community is involved in these things. You know, you could have standards boards set up so that make sure people are following environmental standards, equal opportunity standards, you know, what have you, and that things are basically community-based and democratic.
Pete,
I look at it this way.
Pete, we have to our engineer is saying there's another part of the show that people we have to give way to our other fascinating and brilliant and thoughtful folks that do the old mole. Thanks a lot for talking. We could go through the list of all these possibilities endlessly. Let's try again to cover some of them. Thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Oh, thanks so much, Bill. Everyone, support community radio. We need it.
Oh, boy. Thanks for talking to us.